we're back, and welcome to After the Buzzer 2024.
There you go.
It's a brave new world. No, probably not. But anyway, we're here. I'm Mike Gross. Gordy's alongside. Gordy, happy holidays,
man. Happy New Year.
Yes, I'm with you. And our guest is just completed a college football career at Wisconsin after Warwick. It's a W theme. And hopefully heading to the NFL. And we're going to talk with Hayden Rucci. Hayden, welcome to the big show.
Thanks for having me.
You got it, man. I watched a lot of the bowl game and watched the end. I thought you guys played really well against an elite opponent. Fell short 35-31. 7-6 this year. Obviously, in August, you're not thinking we hope to go 7-6. But I thought you guys were playing well at the end of the year. So I'll stop talking now, and you sort of assess how this season went for Wisconsin.
Yeah, you know, we went through a lot of ups and downs throughout the season. It's always tough trying to implement a totally new offense that that nobody's really used to. My years previous to Wisconsin, we had a completely different system, and then kind of overhauling that this off season in the spring ball, then in the fall camp. There's definitely some growing pains early in the season. Maybe not winning a couple games that we had hoped to, and then it got a little rockier at the end of the season after losing to Indiana and Northwestern. But we had two big trophy games at the end of the season, starting with Nebraska, and I think that's where the momentum really shifted in winning that game in overtime, and then just carrying that momentum into our biggest game of the year, which is Minnesota, and finally getting that axe back.
Axe, that's right.
Paul Bunyan's axe, baby.
That's definitely our huge point in the season. Everybody's thinking about that axe. After that game, we felt good going into our bowl game. We knew LSU was going to be a huge opponent, probably one of the best that we had faced all season. And I thought that we had played really well throughout the game. It was just they had really explosive offense, tough to contain. And, you know, the chips didn't fall in our favor at the end, but I'm still proud of this team and everything that we accomplished this season.
How did the offense change, and how did, I don't know about the culture. I think sometimes I get tired of hearing that term, but how did the operation change from Paul Chris to Luke Fickell?
Yeah. So in our old offense, it was a lot more pro style, your personnel with usually 12 or 13 or even extra alignment on the field at times, a lot more run heavy, and that completely shifted with a whole new coaching staff and a new philosophy of, we called it it's traditionally the air raid, but in Wisconsin, you know, we got to call it the dairy raid.
I like it.
That was the new wrinkle that we added. And like I said, it took some time to really get it working, which, I mean, I think that was most evident in our last game. We definitely saved the best for last. But yeah, it was a lot more spread, no huddle, which is something that I was not used to at all, and just chucking the ball around a lot more.
Yeah. So you announced on December 26th that you were not going to come back. You could have taken a 6-year because of COVID, but you announced that you were going to move on after this season. What went into your decision?
Yeah, there was a lot that went into my decision. A lot of conversations and reflecting on my time. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of guys usually only get 5 years, so that extra, the 6-year was really just a bonus. And I definitely considered taking it. But for me, my ultimate goal is to play at the next level, and I felt most prepared coming out of this year, and I just felt like right now is my best time to make that jump.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much, your dad was drafted back in, I guess it was 1991, somewhere around there. Your dad, Todd, played a long time in the NFL, most with the Patriots, your dad, Todd. How much of a resource has he been in this process? Now, granted, it's a different world than it was then, but what has he been able to tell you about this whole process and what it's going to entail?
Yeah, I mean, ever since coming out of high school, both of my parents were my biggest resources, and, mm-hmm. and like, the world has definitely changed since they've been in it, and even from my time stepping into college football,
I'll too, say
where we're at now is even a completely mm-hmm. world. So I've leaned a lot on that, just about what to do and where to take these next steps. But they've definitely been my both my parents have been my biggest influences and role models in this decision.
Talking about players, you say how things have changed since you've been there. You were right. Your career was right in the middle of this crazy change in this sport. Some of this is now opt-outs of bowl games. That's one of the things that has been a topic of conversation. And college players are sort of, I think, obligated to say, hey, my teammates, they have the right to do what they want. They and of course that's true. I respect their decision, blah, blah, blah. But I've got to believe behind the scenes, some guys are a little pissed off that their teammates are bailing out in their bowl game. And I'm certainly not asking you, Hayden, to throw anybody under the bus. But is there some sentiment behind the scenes that, hey, this guy's my teammate and he went through all this stuff with me and now he's out? Is there any of that going on?
You know, I think in maybe previous years where there wasn't so much NIL, and, you know, for better or for worse, NIL has completely changed the landscape of college football. Yep. And guys paid, and it's definitely just a different kind of job that we're being asked to do. So yep. I think in today's world, it's definitely, like I said, for better or for worse, it's definitely more of a business. And that's why I'm going back to, like, guys truly have to make the best decision for them, because, I mean, there's the college level of getting paid, and then there's the NFL level of being paid. And, it's truly a business decision now. And, I mean, you play all these years with your teammates and everything. And it is tough when guys do have to make that decision to move on. But I think that's the coolest thing about Wisconsin. It's just the culture ever since that I've been there. It truly is like family. And whatever decision guys end up making, everybody always has their back. So there's never any hard feelings in our locker room with whatever decision guys make. I mean, everybody has to have their own best interests in mind. I think everybody's respected people's decisions, and I truly don't think there's any bad blood.
Madison is my favorite college town that I've ever been to. I think that would be a really cool place to go to school, maybe except for the climate a little bit. So tell us about what it was like to be a student there. And do you sort of sense that that place is a little special? I mean, you haven't gone anywhere else to college, so you don't have anything to compare it to. But tell us a little bit about being a Badger and sort of being that, having that for life.
Absolutely. Ever since I first stepped foot on campus back in, shoot, what was that?
2019 or when you were visiting? Or
it was after my sophomore high school in the summer.
Wow. So 17.
Yeah, ever since that day when I stepped foot on campus, I knew that place was special. Although it did help, I did take that visit in June, and it wasn't January or February.
That's right.
I will say, each year, those winters, you know it's going to be cold, but you truly forget how cold it gets.
That's funny.
We had a pretty mild winter this year so far, so we were kind of blessed, but a couple of days, like right before we left, it started to get that bitter cold sweeping in again. It's like, man, I actually gets here. But no, Madison, I could not be more grateful that that's where I got to spend my 5 years of college. Just the entire, I mean, it's a huge student base. So you get to bump into people from from all different walks of life, and even on the team too, there's guys from all over. But kind of going back to the culture thing, that's what I appreciate the most, of right. just the quality and the hardworking type of guys that we had in that locker room. I'll always reflect back on the people and the friendships that I made throughout my time there. I couldn't be more thankful from the guys I got to work with day in and day.
When you see the little snowmobile trails with little stop signs on them, that's when you know you're not in a tropical climate. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Hayden, you got to play a lot of football. You did not get to catch a lot of passes, and I assume that to play at the next level, you're going to have to be more of a weapon as a receiver. So how do you work on that? Tell us. What's happening now? Do you have agents? Do you have trainers? What's the process right now of sort of preparing to be a tight end in the NFL?
Yeah, so the first thing with agent, I've been talking with the guy who I've kind of always had in the back of my mind. His name's Jack Becton. He was my dad's agent when he was going through.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, it all kind of works out and makes sense. So I've been talking with him pretty closely. But for the point to adapting my game to the next level, I'm actually pretty excited because I can kind of go into that next level knowing what kind of tight end I'm going to be. And that's honestly more of the blocking type tight end that I've always kind of been. Yep. You know, the season was a little different trying to adapt to a different role. But I think that helped me kind of diversify my skill set, because previously with our more pro style offense, it was a lot more in line blocking defensive ends and D linemen. And then this year, getting, you know, like you said, I wasn't involved a ton in the passing game, but capitalizing on those opportunities when I was asked upon, and then just being in a spread offense, blocking a lot more different body types like DB, safeties, and those guys in the secondary. So it's been a lot of new for me and what I've been asked to do, but I've had a ton of fun just trying to adapt to a different ask.
I should say just a little bit of housekeeping. Your dad was actually a second round pick of the Patriots in 93, not 91. I misspoke earlier. And he had a nice long career out of Penn State. And your mom, Stacy, was an All-American field hockey player at Penn State. And your grandfather, Tom Gilbert, was the longtime F&M coach who played for the Colts for a few years back in the 60s, I believe it was. But what do I want to ask you about, Hayden? What's it like when you show up, I guess, for your first practice as your red shirt year? You know, everybody's good. You know, you're used to being the guy in high school, and now you show up and everybody's that guy. How much of a culture shock is that, for lack of a better phrase?
Yeah, I mean, day one you show up and it's like, okay, like, everybody's just faster than me, just bigger and stronger. Mm-hmm. So it really, it makes you motivated as good as those other guys. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the most fun part, just trying to get back to going from in high school, kind of the big fish in a small pond. Now you're going to the opposite scenario and just trying to prove yourself. And mm-hmm. I think that what like your early years are spent doing, just trying to earn the trust of your coaches and, mm-hmm. and team to be able to get on the field. Mm-hmm. And then once you're on the field, proving that you belong there, mm-hmm. and can gain that and keep playing. So it's definitely a lot of motivation, mm-hmm. But it's also a lot of fun because it's a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. I think is probably the biggest challenge of my life so far.
Was there a welcome to college football moment? Like, whoa, like that?
I would say, I mean, my freshman year, my first fall camp, I separated my shoulder in one of our first like live scrimmages of fall camp. So that definitely sucked and kind of set me back. But I think that kind of laid the groundwork for some of the obstacles that I'd be facing throughout the rest of my career, you know, dealing with, unfortunately, a bunch of different injuries. Mm-hmm. but learning how to overcome that and get back to playing confident and getting back on the field.
Because everybody plays. Sir, you had the Liz Frank thing too. I guess it was in 2021, and I know there were a couple other things. I guess in 2022. So it's kind of an ongoing thing where everybody kind of plays hurt, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, college football is one of the most taxing sports for the body. Yeah, in 2021 had the Liz Frank that I missed half the season for, and then last year I had UCL surgery on my thumb. Oof. I tore that in our Illinois practice week, and then I was supposed to get surgery on Monday following the Illinois game, and I was going to be able to play the following week, but then during the Illinois game, I got a high ankle sprain and some nasty turf toe, so I was in a boot and a cast on my right hand for a week. So just battling back from that, and yeah, there's been a whole lot of different things to deal with throughout my career, but I'm happy to say I always overcame it.
And you're about what's your size? 6'5", 255 or so?
Yeah, so I've been a couple different weight ranges since I've been at Wisconsin. This year I played at like just under 250, but
oh, okay.
Four and change. We like to round up to 6'5", though.
There you go. We round up. I sort of suspected that there was some of that going on in sports, the rounding up. Yeah. How's Nolan doing? He's gotten to play a little. And of course, he was a mega recruit coming out of high school. Where's he at in his sort of football progress? And what do you see for him going forward next year?
Yeah, so he we have a pretty good starting left tackle, so he's been backing him up for majority of his career here. But he actually got some meaningful snaps last game against LSU, and I could not have been more excited to see him get out there on the field.
I did notice that he was out there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it was so fun cheering him on and see him do great out there. You know, he had a game-winning touchdown catch earlier.
Yes. Yeah, how about that?
Against Illinois.
that was pretty unbelievable. We still always look back on that game. But yeah, he's been having a lot of fun.
So in the bowl, was he playing because the other tackle was out, or the other left tackle was out, or what? Why did he get to play so much in that game?
Yeah, our left tackle, he went down with an injury right around halftime, third quarter, I believe. So,
oh, okay. Okay.
Stepped up.
Yeah. So, where are you right now? Are you around here? What's your sort of plan for the next couple of months? I don't know. Will you do a pro day? Will you do any sort of an all-star game? I mean, what's the scenario for the next couple months?
Yep. Right now, I'm currently back in Lititz for a couple weeks, just enjoying some time back at home.
There you go.
You know, we get very limited opportunities to come back home. This year was actually the first year that I've had off for. They gave us off for Christmas before the bowl game, so that was my first time being able, my first holiday really home.
Wow.
Since 2019, so 4 or 5 years. So that was awesome, just to be able to get home, see the family.
So you mentioned about Nolan catching the game-winning touchdown pass against Illinois. I found everything interesting about that, how the play is called Casey Raybock after the former Wisconsin lineman and how Nolan had to change jerseys and all that stuff. But I think one of the things that jumped out about it was you seemed as excited about it as he did. Could you just take us through that whole scenario?
Oh, 100%. So we had that play in for 2 or 3 weeks previous, mm-hmm. and Nolan was wearing number 93, I believe it was, for 3 weeks just for that play.
Yeah.
And we honestly, I mean, we put in a bunch of different kind of trick plays and stuff like that, never really expecting them to fall, especially not for a game-winning play.
Mm-hmm.
Had driven the ball back down the field against Illinois to get that final score, and we're all standing there in our huddle, and waiting for, it was third down, I think it was, and we're all staying in the huddle waiting for our offensive coordinator to call the play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the O-linemen was kind of said Rotbach, like the name of the play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, all right, shut up, dude. Like, we got to lock in here. And then, of course, our offensive coordinator comes over and calls Casey Rotbach play, and everybody just kind of looks at each other like, oh, this is actually happening. I look around for Nolan. Nice. He's about like 10, 20 feet away, standing on the sideline, has no clue what's happening, and I start waving him over like, come on, like it's time.
It's real.
He realized what's going on at this point, and I kind of see him like get super serious, and he comes over the huddle, and I was thinking to myself, like, do I try and pump him up right now, say something to him? I was like, you know, there's nothing I can say right now that will help him. Like, he's got this, we practiced it. So yeah, of course we go out there, and it's supposed to be kind of a muddle huddle, so
right,
the deep doesn't really know what's going on. And of course Nolan walks directly to the edge of the huddle. The entire Illinois defense starts pointing him out, and he's eligible. I'm like, well, all right, that's he just blew it. We get the play started. Nolan comes over to the left, and somehow they just kind of forgot about him. And I was in the backfield, ball snaps, Nolan fake pass sets for a second, then rolls out and nobody covers him, and our backup QB who's playing, Braden, chucks it up to him, and thank God Nolan is 6'8".
I just gotta say, he's a big target.
He's
yeah,
the only one who could have made that catch.
Yeah, he made a good catch. Yeah, it was a good hands catch.
That's awesome.
It was ridiculous. I kind of saw it from where I was in the backfield, but watching the replay after was pretty amazing. And I also did not catch when I was on the field that he immediately turned around and did a bow. Until we were on the bus headed to the team plane afterwards, and I asked him, like, how did he even think to do that? Because I remember when I scored my touchdown, there was no thought or theatrics that I had planned out, but I guess that he had put a little thought into it.
That's fun.
Flair for the dramatic.
Hey, I noticed that you're a multi-academic All Big Ten, and you got your degree in real estate and urban land economics. Now, football doesn't last forever, as you are well aware. What do you want to do when football ends?
Yeah, so whenever football is done in my life, I've been kind of talking with some folks around Lititz and Lancaster and Harrisburg area about starting a career in commercial real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Back here.
Great. Good for you.
Yeah, that'll be great. Are you going to be going somewhere else to train in the next couple months, or is there anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
So end of January, I'm heading down to Nashville. That's where I'll be doing my training.
Okay.
For our pro day, which is our pro day at Wisconsin, which is at the end of March.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Yeah, I mean, how does the combine work as far as invitations and such? I'm not really up to speed with that. I mean, how does that whole process work?
Yeah. So the combine, they send out invites to the top, players in college football. I think it's 300.
Mm-hmm.
But I know realistically, I'm not a top 300 player in college football, so I'm not expecting an invite to that. So mainly just focusing on our pro day.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, you get a closer look there, right, than you would at Indianapolis, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, we always have a ton of scouts that yeah, come out and watch our pro days. Yeah. So yeah, that'll be my main focus.
Hey Hayden, we appreciate it, man. It's I hope it works out for you.
Yeah.
And I mean, something will work out for you. But yeah,
I would think you'd be in camp with somebody for sure.
Yeah, that's that'll be cool, and we'll be watching, and we'll be watching your brother. And yeah, Madison, I'm going back. I'm going back to Madison next fall. How about that?
Yeah. I'd highly recommend it.
There you go. There you go.
Best of luck, Hayden, and we appreciate the time.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
Take care. Be well.
You too.
Bye. Hayden Ritchie, ladies and gentlemen.
God love him.
Yeah, I'm
really
mean,
a nice kid.
Yeah,
really a nice kid.
And it's pretty thankless, as he alluded to. You know, he in different times in his career, thumb, foot, ankle, shoulder injuries.
Yeah,
it's a pretty thankless thing. And,
yeah.
And as you mentioned, it's like he was in an offense where the tight end wasn't featured. He caught 17 balls in his time there. So it's a pretty thankless thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting that. You know, in this last year with Luke Fickell as the head coach,
mm-hmm.
he could have, you know, they could have used him as a receiver a little more. But again, you got to stay healthy. And I think he's always been more of a blocker. He's a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a large body. And I didn't even think about this until today, but that difference between Paul Christ and Luke Fickell in the offensive style and also somewhat personality, I think, had to be pretty big.
Yeah, the one thing that when I was getting ready for this today, he was mic'd up in practice one day.
I saw that too. That was good.
Where at one point he said he's an old soul at heart. And the other thing was he talked about they were playing music in practice.
Yeah.
And how that was the music that they listened to on the middle school bus. It was kind of amusing. And he walked up to one teammate and said, "What's the worst thing you've ever done that you've never told anybody?"
Yeah, it was really a lot of times when those guys are mic'd, it's obvious that they're very conscious that they're mic'd.
Yes.
But I thought he, while he was very conscious of it, kind of used it in a good way. He wasn't a dick about it at all.
No, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. He did really good at that. He's always been a really nice kid.
Right.
I think just being in college and dealing with the media so often, I think has another level of being articulate and being thoughtful and being able to present yourself. Yeah.
And as I've mentioned before, my wife, who taught at Kissel Hill Elementary School, she had Hayden and Nolan when they were both fifth graders. And she said Hayden was just a really good student and really buckled down. So,
and what you see, twice the size of everybody.
Well, that was the other thing she mentioned. She and there was a kid named Nick Fucci. They used to go out on the playground, and of course they were dominant because they were bigger than the other. Because the other kids would complain, and I said, "Well, just tell them to get better.
Yeah,
just improve, for God's sake.
Get better.
Get on the sled.
Stop somebody, for God's sake. Get on the sled." So there you go.
So obviously we wish Hayden all the best, and it was great to catch up with him at this juncture in his career.
Yeah, one of the good guys.
Yeah, for sure. So along with that, you are just back from Penn State's bowl adventure where they fell short against Ole Miss. Now, the thing, you know, the phrase that James Franklin used after the game, a lot of moving parts, a lot of guys did not play in the game. And, you know, I don't think that rings as an excuse, but I also think there's probably people in the fan base who don't want to hear it. You know, but at the same time, I see what he's saying. You know, they had guys that didn't play, key guys that didn't play, and that had to hurt him. Like, they're two starting corners on an excellent defense, and their best pass rusher, Chop Robinson. So that had to hurt.
You read between the lines, I felt like. You could read between the lines of what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
He hates this so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was, apparently, he was negotiating with players, their agents, their families about playing time and how many snaps are you going to play? And you guys said we're going to play in the first half, but not the second half. And there was so much going on. That's what he was, other than the obvious thing, two new coordinators and some of their best players opting out. But then you had two guys who are probably going to be early round, probably first round picks, Kalen King, the cornerback, and Olu Fashanu, the offensive tackle, who is going to be a top five pick from what you're hearing.
Yep.
These guys both traveled with the team,
went
to Atlanta, practiced with the team. Fashanu dressed for the game.
I was going to ask you about that. That struck me as really odd.
When we were up there for Bowl Media Day, he was one of the guys that were made available. And in my mind, I'm sort of thinking, well, these guys that they made available on Bowl Media Day are probably playing in the game. That sort of was a way of delineating it in my mind. So he's sitting there, and people are asking him, you know, and he says, "Well, I haven't decided yet. I got to spend some time with my family." And then I think Frank Bonanni said, "The bowl game or the NFL?" And he said both. You still haven't decided about the NFL, where he could have been a first-round pick a year ago if he'd have turned pro.
Correct.
And I said to Frank, did he say what I did? What I think he just said? And then I tweeted it, and a million people responded to the tweet. And some people were like, well, of course he's playing. Well, okay, then why did he say what he just said?
Right. Very odd. And the fact that he dressed, that was the thing that really jumped out at me, too. Why is he even dressed if he's not going to play?
I mean, he's got the shoulder pads on. Yeah, he's got the whole thing.
The whole thing. That really struck me as
I mean, King was in street clothes on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And Julian Fleming was on street clothes in the sidelines, even though he had not yet announced.
That he's.
I mean, I don't know why. People were saying that was a done deal for weeks.
And now it's finally official.
Now, yesterday, he announced it finally for the first time.
Again, it's a reminder of the strange landscape that we're in. I don't know what the fix is. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I think what the fix is, ultimately, and this might be 10 years down the road, but the fix is... the players get organized, and there's collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing.
I think that's probably the.
And then you're under. Then the players are under contract, and you know, there's good and bad with that. But at least it'll. I mean, it's pro wrestling right now. This sport is nuts. Mm-hmm. It was the day before the game. They always have at bowl games. They always have both head coaches together in a press conference before the game. So Lane Kiffin and Franklin are sitting up there, and. Somebody was asking the question throughout the week of players and coaches, Sheets or Wawa?
Yes.
So Franklin says, well, I grew up with Wawa because I'm from the Philly area, but now I appreciate Sheets, but I'm going to go with Wawa because that's where my roots are. And then he said, if Sheets or Wawa want to make some kind of a promotional deal with any of our players, I'm happy to negotiate. And then Lane Kiffin said, Yeah. But if you negotiate, then people will say, well, you know, I'm not gonna play in the game unless you make a deal with me. I mean, that's the crap we're dealing with right now. So Lane Kiffin, who sort of seems like a roguish guy who might be. Who is well suited to this? I mean, half his team is transfer portal guys.
Yeah, including their star running back.
Yeah, and he has. I think he's a guy who's realized. That, you know, I'm never going to be able to recruit with Alabama and Georgia, but I might be able to compete with free agency. You know, he might be a man of this moment. And I'm so impressed with, I know I'm rambling a little bit here, but I was so impressed in that game with how hard it must be to teach that offensive system. Mm-hmm. And he's doing it with guys that have only been there for a year. He's doing it with new guys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that system that they play so fast and they're so precise. I was really impressed with the way they played.
They seemed like a really smooth running operation. Yeah. They played well. The quarterback was good. The receivers were good. The running back was good. They really had a good idea how to attack Penn State for sure.
They really did. And I think if Penn State had all their, particularly their guys on the back end of the defense, who are really elite guys, Johnny Dixon and King, it might have been a little different. And Chop Robinson in terms of a pass rusher. You know, to disrupt that tempo maybe a little bit. Maybe it would have been a little different. But, I mean, I picked Ole Miss to win the game. And not well, it sounds like I'm bragging now. But, I mean, not many people did. Not many of my colleagues did. And I just thought Penn State was a mess a little bit with their everything that was going on. But very impressed with the way Ole Miss played.
Yeah. So, again, let's touch on the Julian Fleming piece of this. I mean, Penn State's receiver group was not good this year, and I would think he's an immediate upgrade over what they had. He arrived this week. Dante Cephas, who did not play in the bowl game, is gone. Also, what the hell is the deal with Keandre Lambert-Smith? He played, like, very little in the game, right? Do we know what that's all about?
No, we don't. And he didn't want to talk after the game.
Hmm.
The locker rooms are these. This is a whole media business thing with these locker rooms. The locker rooms are theoretically open, but as a practical matter, not really. But anyway, supposedly some guys who went in the locker room. I did not. I went to the two places where they had people available, but. People went up to him and tried to talk to him, and he didn't want to talk.
Hmm.
I just don't want to ask her any questions right now. So, the weird thing about this, I've never quite seen this before to this degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that they have no production. They're not being targeted, the wide receivers.
I noticed that. In the first half, he threw all the tight ends and running backs. Yeah.
I think they were targeted three times in the first three quarters of the game.
Isn't that crazy?
So zero catches and only targeted three times. This is an oversimplification, but it's a little bit like they're playing 8 against 11.
Yeah.
I mean, not entirely.
You might as well put a bunch of Nolan Ruchis out there. You might as well just have seven linemen.
I mean, I've never seen it to this degree. I'm not sure what... I mean, it's almost like they're conceding. We just can't... They're just not a part of the offense. Mm. I mean, they run out there and run routes, so somebody has to cover them. I mean, you know, but so it's not literally.
But they're not really threats.
But they're not threats. That's right. So they're not threats.
So this is really going to be, I mean, it's Julian Fleming solves it in part, but there's going to have to be something else.
Oh, yeah, they're going to have to get more. And Julian Fleming, for people who don't know, he was coming out of high school. He's from Southern Columbia, about an hour from State College in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And he was... depending on what service, I mean, he was one of the two or three top-ranked players in his high school class nationally and the number one ranked receiver. Now, he really hasn't had a great college career. Part of it is injuries. Part of it is Ohio State has unbelievable receivers. Oh, yes, but Marvin Harrison Jr. was nowhere near the recruit that
Isn't
this
that
kid
strange
was.
How those
Not even close,
yeah.
Which is weird. But he's got to be an upgrade, and it'll be interesting to see how significant an upgrade he is.
You know, because this hasn't been a problem in the earlier stages of Franklin's tenure. And, you know, you had Jahan Dotson and some other guys who were really good players, very productive receivers.
Yeah, and the guy that played for Tampa.
Godwin.
And KJ Hamler.
I mean, they've had a number one guy.
They've had a number one guy, and now they don't even have a number four guy. To be honest,
that's really strange to me because it just feels like you should be able to find receivers because everybody wants to catch the ball.
And that's right. And they had like 10 on scholarship this year, and one of them has transferred out now. Mm-hmm. Anthony Ivey, and the one who transferred out was a I didn't realize he was a really high level recruit. He was a 4-star that a lot of big time people wanted.
That really strikes me as odd that you can't find guys to catch the ball. That's right. In this day and age, that just shouldn't happen.
They have so many guys that are athletic and can run. Now here's an interesting thing. I just thought of this. They have a kid, one of their best recruits is the number one ranked player in Pennsylvania in this current class that's going to be freshman next fall, is a running back. I think his name's Quentin Martin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's from Bell Vernon.
I saw the name and I was like, I couldn't help but think of Quinn Martin.
It's a Quinn Martin production. Yeah.
Epilogue.
Yeah, there you go. But he's to some extent, he's a running back. But to some extent, he was kind of recruited as an athlete, as they say. And he's kind of got that willowy body type. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. you know, as desperate as they've got to be.
Any port in a storm, right?
Yeah, any port in a storm. Yeah.
So that bears watching. The other thing, and you wrote about this in your notes on Sunday, about Ole Miss and how they actually had a staff person who put up an inflammatory tweet, which just strikes me as kind of a low rent thing to do. I mean, really, you really have to resort to that.
And then Kiffin after the game, they asked him about it, and he acknowledged it and said, "Oh, I thought it was pretty funny."
He was totally unrepentant about it.
I mean, he is a dick. I mean, to put it bluntly, he is a dick. I think he's a great offensive mind. I think offensive football coach. Somehow he can teach this system. Somehow he worked with Saban, right? He was a very good offensive coordinator for Alabama, maybe he's a man of this moment, but it's not a great moment.
At what cost?
At what cost? And again, when he talked to the media last week, he was very emphatic. I hate this system. they all hate the calendar. Mm-hmm. They all hate the fact that they have this early signing day and all this free agency stuff to deal with and prepare for a bowl game. And if you've got to hire two coordinators, which Franklin did.
And plus, as you mentioned before, the whole retention issue. It's like retaining guys like through the end of their eligibility. Yeah,
recruiting guys that are already on your roster. That's a big part of it. So it's gotten nuts. And I think they would all like Franklin says, I would really like to see the Power 5 commissioners get in a room and you don't come out of the room until you have some firewalls set up here.
Well, it makes some sense because it is a little bit... I mean, I honestly go back and forth because I'm all in favor of free agency from the standpoint of the players have been so beholden to powers that be forever.
Yep.
So to me, the players do deserve more empowerment.
Yeah.
But it also seems like it comes with cost too, right?
It comes at a cost, and no, people talk about these things as if the people who just watch sports because they really like sports they're not a factor in this at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is worse for us right. as fans, or this is worse for fans and mm-hmm. It's funny. I got in the plane going home from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. This guy sits next to me. And he's got a Penn State T-shirt on. He's mm-hmm. obviously a fan, and he's been at the game. And he starts talking to me about the game. He said, I really like that guy, Bob Jones. Is it Bob Jones? Talking about writers, you know. Yeah. Bob Jones. You mean Dave?
It's a composite character. Bob Flounders, Dave Jones. He morphed them together.
Yeah, maybe he had them mixed. That's why I didn't think of that. Maybe he had Flounders and Jones mixed up. So then I showed him that selfie that I have with me and Dave from the stadium. And then people all around, I mean, it became like a talk show. People all around are jumping up and making, and some guy said, Tom Allen's going to be awesome, the new defensive coordinator. He's going to be awesome. Don't worry about that. And then there were guys that were saying, I'm never going to another bowl game. They asked all this money. You know, it was really funny. And
you should have had this with you. You could have done it.
I know. I should have
a
recorded.
Bonus edition of After the Buzzer on the plane from Atlanta.
Yeah, that's right. It should have been a bonus edition of the big show. But it was really funny. And people, and also my emails. I mean, people are really up in arms. And then some people think I'm being too kind, and some people think I'm being too hard. And
which means you're probably right where you need to be.
Which is right where you need to be. That's right. Anyway.
But it is interesting. I wonder, this is something I was thinking about today. I wonder if the whole opt-out thing, if that's going to mean the demise of these non-playoff bowls. Maybe that's too extreme a position, but I wonder in some respects, because kids aren't going to want to play in these games.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to go play in the ReliaQuest bowl? Maybe. I mean, our guest did. Played mm-hmm. The ReliaQuest Bowl was the Tampa game that used to be the Outback Bowl.
The Tampa Bowl.
You can't get a decent steak in this town. Yeah, it's too bad. It's too bad it's ReliaQuest now and not Outback. But we actually got Outback steaks and Bloomin' Onions during the game when we were down there covering
Speaking of which, Chick-fil-A. That's I was jealous of you guys. I was Chick-fil-A, thinking you guys yeah. like... At the game on
Chick-fil-A, we ate really well at that. You know, and the New Year's Six games,
right?
Man, they really take care of you.
That's true. It's a great
and it's gotten to the point now where they're providing three meals a day. That's become a pretty standard thing.
This is great.
And you know, you go to that media hospitality room and you can eat all your meals there. We did go out one night to a really good. Southern style cooking place. It was a tremendous place, but there were five of us, and of course Frank wants like 11 side dishes, so we ended up getting like enough food for 25 people, and we ate maybe 2/3 of it, but it was great food, and it was enough. That was where Dalai Lama was.
Oh, wow.
All those, it was one of those restaurants that had the pictures of celebrities on the wall.
Who wanted the Dalai Lama? Dalai Lama in the back.
Yeah, so like Hillary, there's a picture of Hillary Clinton. There's a picture of James Brown, the hardest working man in show business. All these celebrities. And then the Lama, who we tried to find. We tried to track him down when he was in Bloomington, Indiana one time.
It's a good prospect. Smart as a whip.
Did I ever tell you about this?
No.
What? We're really going down the rabbit hole now, but that's what we do. One time, Penn State's playing in Indiana, and Bob Dylan and the Dalai Lama are both in. So Bob Dylan,
of course,
Dalai Lama and Joe are in Bloomington, Indiana on the same weekend. Now, here's the greatness of Frank Bonanni. He found two Tibetan restaurants in Bloomington, Indiana. So we went to one of them.
Of course.
And hoping to run into the Lama, of course. I mean, we're going to do selfies with the Dalai Lama. Are you kidding me? How awesome would that be? He was not there, even though this place was like a shrine to him. There was all this Dalai Lama.
Come on, Dalai, do better. They love you here.
Yeah. So anyway, so I took a picture of the picture of the, in Atlanta, I took a picture of the picture of the Lama on the wall and said, once again, the big guy moves us again. Right?
I like that story a lot. You went looking for the Dalai Lama. Can you imagine a conversation between Joe and Bob Dylan? That would be hilarious.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, do they have a language in common? I'm not sure they do.
A Google Translate for Bob Dylan.
Somebody'd have to step in.
I think so.
Like the UN.
So I think probably the last piece of business we have today is to wish well to our friend Dave Jones, who is retiring in April, and also Pat Principe. Both were honored when you were in Atlanta, and well deserved. They both have done it forever, and so we're happy for them that they got to go out on their own terms. Not always the case in this day and age with media, so we're happy for them, and we wish them the best.
Absolutely, and we'll have Dave on again.
Oh,
on
the show again. We'll get fired up about something.
I mean, Dave is not done. He's not actually retiring until April, which I assume means he's going to the Final Four, probably. But I do want to say something about Pat Principe, because as you know, Gordy, for many years in our business, guys that do what we do didn't really have a lot of respect for guys that didn't.
I've heard tell of this.
I mean, their game, you know, it's like Wink Martindale. You're more worried about your hair than the game, you know. Well, that's not what he was.
Right.
That's not what he is.
Right.
And he's a guy who really understands sports, really likes sports.
Right.
And Channel 8 used him in that way. I mean, they spent a lot of money sending him all over the country to cover the Super Bowl, the Phillies, the Eagles, and of course, Penn State. So I always liked Pat, and I think respected him, and I think he's one of the guys for whom that gap sort of shrank between the broadcast side and the print side. Yeah.
So yeah, we both have fond memories of driving up to Penn State games with Dave. Those were always interesting
classic
sessions. Some of which should have been recorded probably for a podcast.
Oh yeah. Well, boy, we're not perfect for that, for this format. Yeah.
Some with a 7-second delay, perhaps.
We want to be pretty liberal about that.
But we wish Pat and Dave the best for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Two good guys.
And I think we've reached the end of our journey for another week, and we're thankful to Hayden Ritchie for taking some time to be with us. And next week we're going to have Earl Curt, and he's written a book about his long NBA career, and he's the answer to a trivia question. He was the only member of the 1982-83 Sixers to win a second championship ring with those Houston Rockets.
That's
in 1994.
That's a great question. So I think I could have, if you'd asked me who's the only one, I think I might have been able to figure that out if you'd given me some time. But yeah, that's right.
So Earl will be with us next week.
So we look forward to that.
So.
All right, that's it, gang. This has been After the Buzzer. We'll be back, as we said, next week. He's Gordy. I'm Mike. See ya.
See you later.